Our last case is 13-291 and 13-493, Anita Hauser versus the City of Dayton Police Department and Major E. Mitchell Davis. For the appellant, Mr. Green.
Good morning, Madam Chief Justice, Justices of the Court. The issue that we bring to you this morning deals with immunity and whether discrimination law in Ohio expressly imposes a liability on employees of political subdivisions. We say it doesn't. The court below thought that it did, so we're here to ask this court to reverse that. There is a conflict that has been certified between the 2nd District, where our case originated, and the 8th District, the Campanelli case. So the issue that we're looking at is 2744.03A6C, that is one of the exceptions to employee immunity under the political subdivision immunity provisions. And it says that the employee is immune from liability unless liability is expressly imposed by a section of the revised code. We contend that there is no express imposition of liability on an employee under 4112.
And counsel, I'm reading from the Court of Appeals, and I guess we're going to have to address that this morning, aren't we? Doesn't the immunity become lifted for supervisors, and therefore is there a question here whether the major was a supervisor? If you accept he's a supervisor, he's without immunity, is he not?
There are two issues, I think, in your question, sir. One is the Gennaro case, of course, which is behind this discussion, that dealt with the liability of supervisors in the private context under 42 or under 4112. And then the factual issue as to whether or not Davis in this particular case constitutes a supervisor. But it's the city's position, Davis's position here, that the language of 4112 is not sufficiently particularized to impose liability on him for purposes of defeating the immunity that he otherwise has under 2744.03. So that is the issue that I really want to focus my time on. This court has looked at several other cases over the years where the contention has been that there was some language in a revised code section that expressly imposed liability on an employee. Kramer versus Auglaize Acres, Marshall versus Montgomery County Children's Services Board, O'Toole versus Denahan. In each one of those situations, you found that the language of the statute involved did not expressly impose liability on the employee. So if you look at 4112.02 here, our position is that that language does not begin to expressly impose liability on employees of the political subdivision. There is a lot of definitional language in 4112.01A1 that defines what a person is, and it goes on at great length to talk about individuals, partnerships, associations, organizations, corporations. It goes on and on and on. And it eventually includes
employees. Counsel, I know where you want to be, but my question is the major a supervisor, and isn't the Gennaro case controlling in this case that he is a supervisor and therefore does not have immunity?
We contend, Your Honor, that the Gennaro case is not controlling because it doesn't apply to the situation of a political subdivision and the express imposition of liability. That is the Major Davis's first and primary argument before this court. Now, there is a dispute of fact in the underlying proceedings as to whether or not he actually constitutes Anita Hauser's supervisor for purposes of any of this discussion. But I think for purposes of me being here before you, we have to assume that he was, in fact, a supervisor. And the issue is, if so, so what? If he's a supervisor, is there an express imposition of liability on him as a political subdivision employee? Gennaro says private sector, yes. We say in public sector, no, because if you look at the language of 4112.01A1, where it defines persons, it eventually gets to political subdivisions, but it's an and. It's in conjunction with all the rest of these other things, which included employees. If the General Assembly had intended that 4112.02 was going to expressly impose liability on employees of the political subdivision, all it had to do was say so. All it had to do was, in that definition at 4112, when it says at the very end, at A1, political subdivisions, agencies, authorities, board, and commissions of the state, all it had to say was, and their employees. But that language is not there, and that, I think, speaks loudly to the fact that this is one other example, just as Kramer was, just as the other cases were that I referenced, where there is no express imposition of liability on the political subdivision employee. Now, other courts have looked at this issue below, and there have indeed been situations where the Gennaro analysis has been applied without consideration of whether the express imposition of liability on the political subdivision employee standard was met. There have also been some rather compelling dissenting opinions written, most notably by Judge Hall in our case, and by Judge Arbour in the most recent of these cases, which is Stakura versus Toledo, that came out earlier this year, which you all declined to look at. Our contention is, on behalf of Major Davis, that the legislature was fully aware of the concept of political subdivision immunity as it looked at the statutes the last time around. And at that time, it had your decision in Campbell versus Burton case, where you did expressly find, or did find, that there was express imposition of liability. You found it in the context of criminal liability at that time. The legislature looked at that and said, no, that's not what we meant. What we mean is express imposition, civil liability, and we have the statute as a result that we have now. So what's the effect if we permit the Second District decision to stand here? Well, we submit that the effect is a bad one. The whole idea of having political subdivision immunity in the first place, and immunity with respect to political subdivision employees, is because of the cost-benefit analysis relative to the functions of public government. And if we permit claims against individual employees in the political subdivision circumstance without an express imposition of that liability, we're going to adversely affect those employees, we're going to adversely affect their morale, we're going to enhance the cost of litigation in Ohio by forcing the political subdivisions to pay for the cost of defense of the employee under those circumstances.
Although, Mr. Green, under 4112, you still would have the potential of the city itself being liable, correct?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Immunity is still there, under your view, for the employees, but not for the city itself.
Absolutely correct.
As a policy matter, though, in a situation involving discrimination, which almost seems, in a sense, to be intentional conduct, isn't that counterintuitive to say that individuals who have the ability to do or not do something would be immune, and yet the employer will be the one vicariously liable?
The employer is there to redress the wrong if a wrong has been committed at its behest by its employees.
As the deep pocket, you're saying?
As the deep, so-called deep pocket, yes, Your Honor. The legislature, in its wisdom, has made the decision in the past that we're going to only in a limited fashion permit litigation against the public sector to begin with. We have these immunities for a reason. Because we perceive the financial impact upon the political subdivision with respect to dealing with the claims against the employees. So we can redress Ms. Hauser's complaint, if it turns out that she's correct, by the response of the city of Dayton without having to have Major Davis involved in that case. The further question I think that you raised.
When you said without having to have Major Davis involved in the case, isn't it
as a defendant
his behavior that has to be shown to connect to the employer if you want to find a liability against the employer?
Yes, Your Honor, and I was shorthanding there. He obviously would be involved in the case, but not as a defendant, is what I was trying to say. That certainly
his conduct.
Okay, so
the scenario that you're discussing is that the employee is immune, but he is the wrongdoer, and that wrongdoer then the city will be responsible for the consequences, not the wrongdoer.
Well, the wrongdoer may in fact end up in some fashion or other responsible, but not through our particular judicial process. That's correct.
Well, how would he? Do you mean with employment ramifications from the city to the supervisor?
Obviously. I mean, it would only make sense that the city employer would take action with respect to employees.
Has that happened here?
In this particular case, it has not happened here, but you invite me to launch into a discussion of the facts and why the Major Davis is not liable for anything here, but it has not happened here, Your Honor. Major Davis is no longer with the department, but that was because of a voluntary retirement and not because of any discipline. The case that got us here with respect to conflict is Campoletti that came out of the 8th District. There has been criticism of the Campoletti decision for not having specifically discussed the impact of this court's Gennaro decision. We would submit that the reason for that is probably straightforward, that when Campoletti is being decided, there is no perception that there is a provision of 4112 that specifically or expressly imposes liability on the employee. So therefore, that court sees no reason to discuss whether or not Gennaro does or doesn't impact its resolution. It goes through the three steps of the 2744.03 exclusions from immunity and says, check mark, check mark, check mark, they don't apply, and therefore there is immunity with respect to this employee.
Why doesn't any person acting directly or indirectly in the interest of an employer bring into play the employee?
That, of course, is the issue from Gennaro. And the distinction being, is that language intended to define the word employer, to sweep up the vicarious liability the employer has for the conduct of its employees, or was it intended to add other people to the definition of employer? We have laid out the argument in the briefs, following on the line that Justice Moyer argued in his dissent in Gennaro, that it was the former, not the latter. We would have no problem with this court deciding to revisit Gennaro and to determine that, but I'm not here to advocate that. I'm here to advocate that the language of 4112 doesn't expressly impose liability on a political subdivision employee because it never says so. And that's all we say is if you're going to expressly impose, you ought to say so in the statute. I will reserve my remaining time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gittes.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. The General Assembly took great pains in devising and drafting 4112 to make it clear that managers who run our cities who intentionally discriminate against women or minorities or the disabled or veterans or people serving in the military or older workers can be sued. And it is consistent with the whole structure and purpose of 4112 that such managers be personally accountable in court.
You say that's clear?
Yes, Your Honor.
You say the General Assembly did a good job and made that clear?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe that's the case.
So why are we here today?
Well, we're here because of an outlier case, Campioletti, essentially. As you know, four other courts have ruled on this specific question. The United States District Court for the Southern District of Ohio has ruled on this question. Those rulings started the same year that Gennaro was decided, by the way. The Albert case, which was the first case to say, hey, it makes no difference whether a manager is in private business industry or in public. They're covered under this act. And then in 2006, 2007, 2009, 2010, the General Assembly saw one case after another saying the language couldn't be clearer. And has taken, there were bills introduced to reverse Gennaro, by the way, following 1999. None of them have moved beyond a sponsor's testimony. So if there's any question about the General Assembly's view of the situation in our courts, it is they see no problem. More important, though, as this court knows, 4112, among other things, says employers can't discriminate against women. I'm focusing on women because of the facts of this case. Now, the General Assembly gave us two definitional provisions that give meaning to that rule, against conduct of intentional discrimination. 4112.01A1 says very clearly that the definition of employer includes political subdivisions and any person who acts directly or indirectly on behalf in the interest of that employer. And then 4112.01A2 tells us who those persons are who may be acting directly or indirectly in behalf of a political subdivision that's an employer, and it includes managers and employees.
Why wouldn't it include just about any employee under that, that interpretation? I mean, if you're looking at any person acting in the interest of an employer, wouldn't it include more than managers and supervisors?
It does, and this definitional statute specifically uses the word employees as well as managers.
So it really doesn't matter that it's a supervisory position in your view? It could be any employee employed by?
That's correct. Co-worker sexual harassment has been the subject of many, many, many cases before the courts of Ohio and the federal courts, some of which reach pretty shocking levels of behavior that are tolerated by their employers. In fact, if I might, I would like to remind this court, I know this court over the years has seen cases which demonstrate why you can't rely on the employer to hold the employee or manager accountable. That's why the General Assembly says they need to answer in court, and Gennaro says they have to answer in court. Go back to Cairns versus Port-au-Prince, case I argued before this court many, many, many years ago involving 4112. In that case, a manager came into a back room and exposed himself to an employee. He had a history under the alleged facts in the case of doing that kind of misconduct. The response of the employer was a note produced in the record saying, send him to Kentucky and let him get his rocks off. He was never disciplined. He was never fired. So co-workers, lead supervisors, team leaders, managers. You can have horrendous acts of discrimination or sexual harassment. The issue is the person licensed to do it? In other words, whether it's an employer or manager, they can never, ever, under Ohio law, be held personally responsible for what they did. That's the question. The General Assembly, by the way, it defined employer to include political subdivisions and the definition of a person, which means any person acting directly or indirectly in the interest of that employer, clearly says, yes, they can be held personally accountable.
Mr. Geddes, Chief Justice Moyer dissented in the Gennaro case. I'm sure you've probably read that preparation for this, as I know you would. But his argument is that any person acting directly or indirectly in the interest of the employer was included in the definition of employer to hold employers responsible for the discriminatory acts of their employees, not to include employees among those who are liable, which I think I see some wisdom in what he was doing there. Obviously, there are actors in the ambit of the employment situation, as you point out, but the accountable party becomes the employer. What's your reaction to that analysis?
Well, I have several reactions. Number one, with I greatly respected Justice Moore, and I argued that case when he was the Chief Justice. And justices like the rest of us are not authorized to.
You're not going
to
tell us he wasn't infallible, are you?
I don't want to say that, but I think he was relying on the fact and reacting to the fact, as many other judges have over the years, that in the federal system, they take a different view of this issue. But he cites to the language in Title VII. But that language is very, very, very different. It actually says any person engaged in interstate in trade affecting interstate commerce, 15 or more employees, and anyone who is their agent. It brings the whole body of agency law into that. And by the way, that U.S. Supreme Court has never ruled. Still hasn't ruled that, in fact, individuals can't be sued under Title VII. And under numerous other federal civil rights laws, by the way, employers, managers can be sued.
Counsel, you agree that the question that I asked Mr. Green, that the city here is on the hook, even if the employee is not, if it's proven that the employee was a wrongdoer in their relationship to the plaintiff here.
Chief Justice O'Connor, you probably didn't notice, but I kind of was shaking my head when you asked him that question and you made your comments. If I may, let me take the point further. There is no effect
on cost.
You're
shaking your head like this or like this? Yeah, what's your answer?
The direct answer to your initial question is there's vicarious liability for most of the potential damages in these cases on the city. So the city's treasury is going to be affected whether the individual is personally accountable or not. Here are the differences. There is a cap on the damage, what the statute refers to as actual damages that the city has a benefit of, which is for most purposes is going to be non-economic damages of $250,000 in Chapter 2744. Secondly, city can never be sued for punitive damages. However, the individuals can be sued for punitive damages as well they should be in some of these cases. And of course, the city has no duty to indemnify them for that. So that doesn't affect the city treasury. So in addition, if this court rules consistent with Gennaro, as I believe you should, and I believe you must, but obviously this is your choice in every case, because of the language and because of just common sense that people should be accountable for that kind of conduct, intentional conduct. But if you rule, the practical consequences will not have any impact on city treasuries, which is the whole purpose of 2744.
Won't have any impact if we hold the wrongdoer here, Mr. Davis, liable.
The liability is there anyway for the city. It's not even, they didn't appeal, the summary judgment decision, which allowed.
We'll then have two pockets rather than one, and that's the ultimate.
No, because the damages are duplicative. You can't get the same money from two parties.
The punitives is
right, but the city doesn't pay punitives by law.
I understand that. It's an addition. Let me just classify it as an additional source of damages for your client would be Mr. Davis. Those that are non-duplicative and able to be retrieved from Mr. Davis.
Yes. But that doesn't affect the city treasury. That's my point. 2744, one of the main notions, in fact, the main notion is to preserve the financial security of our municipalities and counties. And here, as a practical matter, in almost all cases, there's marginal or no impact on the city's exposure. Their exposure anyway, if it's demonstrated it's a manager in these cases, they're suable anyway. There's a specific exemption from immunity for cities for employees filing these cases and for civil rights cases in particular. So there is no consequence. The same players are involved, as you pointed out, Chief Justice. The same witnesses are going to be deposed. As in this case, the same lawyers typically represent both parties. It's the rare case that they don't. And I could go on. There is no practical effect in terms of the real purposes of the Political Subdivision Immunity Act.
So then when would an employee not be liable under a scenario where the city is liable?
If they didn't do it.
Well, if they didn't do it, then the city's not liable.
That's right.
I said when the city is liable, is there any scenario that you would envision where the employee would not also be personally liable?
The only situation that comes to mind, you know, on the spot, is if the city adopts some kind of facially discriminatory policy. You know, like, let's just say, like there used to be, women can't be in SWAT. Let's just using that as a hypothetical. And an officer is carrying out the policy under direct orders, under protest. I cannot imagine that employee being held personally liable, but the city could be held liable for the policy.
Okay, but let's say that we don't have that type of a situation, then doesn't the position that we find ourselves in here really expand the exposure of liabilities in an unprecedented way for individual employees of the city?
No. I mean, the whole chapter is designed and recognizes there are a number of situations. For example, whenever an employee under 2744O3A6B engages in reckless conduct, they're not immune anyway. And the courts have recognized that intentional discrimination is reckless.
Okay.
So this is not a sudden expansion.
Well, it is. We're not talking about recklessly discriminating against somebody. We're talking about an intentional act here.
This court has indicated intentional violations of the law against individuals is recklessness. This court, I think as recently as this year, has issued decisions making...
Well, maybe I should... Okay.
So, you know, most courts certainly have concluded that if you intentionally discriminate against somebody, that's reckless conduct. So this is not a sudden expansion. And as we pointed out in our amicus brief, 41-12-02-J makes any person, remember person is defined to include political subdivisions, managers, employees, who aids, abets, incites, and the list goes on in discrimination, even attempts to discriminate, is liable. That's a unique statute to Ohio. Clearly would encompass people like Major Davis. There are the retaliation provisions, which apply to housing discrimination, not just employment.
But those are not specific. Those are general, and we have some cases that talk about the specificity needed. But it seems that you're going through the Gennaro scenario and saying that you want us to follow the majority there.
Yes. Actually, all I'm saying to the court and asking the court to do is look at the definitions. This doesn't require interpretation.
But the definition is employer includes, and then the language. So we're talking about a definition of an employer, not
yes.
Employee. And that's when you look at the dissent in Gennaro, it logically flows. I mean, there's a logic to the interpretation of the statute that may have been missed in the majority there.
If you look at 41-12.01A3, the term employee is defined, and it's defined as one who works for an employer. So it takes you right back to the employer definition, which says political subdivisions and employer, any person, which includes managers or employees, acting directly or indirectly in the interest of that political subdivision, are the employer, and they are not immune. This is not a complicated case. It doesn't require statutory construction rules. It's just reading the text. And that's all the Gennaro court did.
But it could have said employees are not immune. simply. It could have said that specifically. It doesn't say that.
I don't know of any statute, I suppose I could be missing one, where the legislature uses the words, employees are not immune. The way the legislature...
Employees are liable.
Yeah, the employee, what they say is they include employees in the definition of the terms used, whether it's person or employer or so forth, and specific include political subdivisions and mention managers and employees. And this court, by the way, in the cases, three of the cases cited from your honors, or this court's precedent, where the court found public employees, mainly in children's services related cases, I believe three of the four were, found that they were not subject to suit, they were not accepted from the immunity. The court pointed out because there was no definition of person, as appears in this case. There was no person means political subdivision managers, blah, 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 blah. And I don't mean to minimize by the phrase blah, blah, blah. It's obviously very significant. But so here we have very clear definitions. They are intended to apply to every single statutory prohibition in the chapter, and that's why I mentioned housing, that's why I mentioned retaliation for individuals with disabilities, public access. So that's why they had to put political subdivisions, mention them again when they define the word person, because a lot of cases don't have anything to do with employers.
Thank
so
you.
All we ask is this case isn't hugely significant because we believe the General Assembly directed that managers of our cities who intentionally discriminated would answer in court. It's good policy to be personally accountable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Green.
So what we have is the intersection of two policies here, one that Mr. Geddes very capably argues against discrimination. One that hopefully we all recognize, which favors immunity for political subdivision employees. And the resolution of that is something on which council agree. Read the definitions. We say, read the definitions of employer and person in 411201, and then ask yourself, do these provisions expressly impose liability on political subdivision employees? We think the answer to that question is a square no. There is no express imposition on the political subdivision employees. In fact, it is interesting when you look at the language of the definition of person in 411201A that the words manager and employee in fact appear there, but they appear before the legislature gets to the rest of the definition. So they say, person means all these things, including employees and political subdivisions. Now, why would they do that? If it was so clear-cut that this was an express imposition of liability on employees, we suggest because the legislature was fully aware that political subdivision employees had immunity, political subdivisions had immunity. They only didn't have immunity if there's an express imposition of liability under a statute. So this statute says political subdivisions are expressly liable. It never says that about employees. For those reasons, we believe that you should reverse the Second District, and this is an issue of law. Resolve it in favor of Major Davis. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The gentleman will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.